Greetings, my friends. Welcome to the next episode of the Mint Mob Podcast. Jason here, joined by my buddy Alex across the pond in Germany. We're going to jump into the usual stuff, talk markets, talk drops. We've got a Black Friday batch coming up for you guys. But before we do, let's check in with Alex and see what's going on. What's up, buddy? How are you?
Fuck, man. I inhaled again. Damn, I wanted to not do that. But now I noticed. Now, like last time, I was like, hey, do I really do that? But I actually do. So, yeah, I'm doing great. Thanks for asking. I hope you're doing good as well. Obviously, I did a lot of animating recently. Happy to have that finished in a couple hours, actually. But yeah, as you said, let's jump a little bit into the markets first. We saw a little relief rally. I saw people panicking, telling us that everything goes down to, I don't know, 60, 70,000. I think Bitcoin is trading at around 86 right now. Some people out there say this is just a little correction until we go further to the downside. And yeah, it's interesting, right? Like the fear and greed index actually reached like the biggest fear we had in years. And Bitcoin is trading at 86, right? Like, what's like the market psychology behind that?
The market psychology behind the fear, or the market psychology behind where Bitcoin is?
Yeah, I mean, considering we are at almost 90K and we have like the biggest fear in the markets we've seen in, I think like 2 or 3 years, which is actually crazy. That doesn't fit together in my opinion, right?
I see what you mean. So like with Bitcoin being as high as it is, you're talking about like the the high, it's still pretty high. So why are we so terrified kind of a thing?
Exactly.
Yeah, it's a good question. I mean, honestly, what the pullback last time was all the way back down to like 20 something. Like it was pretty crazy, or actually into the teens maybe. I forget. That was like during the FTX meltdown, right? We went all the way back down to like 15,000 for Bitcoin, I think it was. And then Solana went to 8, of course. ETH was at like 800. And yeah, I mean, it's one of those things, man. Like, I think the market keeps drawing in new people, younger people. If you've not seen this, you know, like a market cycle, if you've not seen, you know, assets rising and falling, then, you know, and especially if you're gambling with money that you probably shouldn't be gambling with, it's going to be pretty fearful, pretty frightful. And at the end of the day, like, again, you know, I posted a bunch of stuff last week. I posted, or I talked about this in the spaces. I talked about this on the podcast. Like, if you're a trader, I mean, and you're trying to trade this market, it's not, to me, it's not the smartest thing you should do. It's just wait for an opportunity, get in front of the opportunity and just sit there and wait. And I think a lot of people are kind of sucked into this idea that trading is the way forward. So I've, especially like you see a lot of younger people posting, or they were trading on margin, or they were borrowing money to trade, or, you know, they're trading or buying with funds that they should be paying rent with, you know, kind of thing. And, you know, it's kind of sad because obviously the market moves in two directions, and the higher the market goes, the thing that people forget is the more potential you have for a drop. And the lower the market goes, the less potential you have for the drop, right? So the fear and greed index should actually be backwards. And that's why people are always saying, or at least, you know, the Rothschilds quote about, you know, you buy when there's blood in the streets. And then you of course, don't forget the last part. It says that, you know, even if that blood is your own, right? So when you're down and you have a quality asset, you should be buying. And obviously you might be fearful. You might have some psychology against buying a falling asset. But the truth is that's where the money is made, right? As long as the story doesn't change, then you're going to be just fine because the market's going to come back. I think what people forget is the size of the market matters. You know, like we're in the multiple trillions in terms of size of crypto market right now. You know, multiple trillion dollar markets don't just disappear. And so if you fall into the mindset of most traders, if you fall into the mindset of crypto Twitter where everything is bad and the world is going to end because the market pulled back, then it's really hard to escape that fear, that psychology that tells you you're doing something crazy and that you're going to lose all your wealth, right? So it's really difficult to go against the grain. But the truth is, like, that's where you have to be. So in terms of psychology, like, I get it, especially for younger people who haven't seen market cycles before, or who haven't studied the size of the market or the adoption story. Like, if you don't understand all that, then it just looks like, or it feels like, this market's just going to disappear tomorrow, which obviously, if you're paying attention, that's not going to happen.
Yeah, absolutely, I agree. What I noticed is that, you know, given the current market sentiment, that was actually even quite a surprise, that there are some crypto pre-sales are kind of heating up, several new token offers with so-called, quote-unquote, strong tokenomics are trending. I think you also mentioned the token that you looked into recently. Do you feel like this is a good market condition to, you know, try to come up with something new and, you know, get some attention with that?
I'm really sort of, you know, anti the market conditions argument, because to me, that's an excuse. You know, like, when we do something with Goodfellas, the market's going to do what the market's going to do. So, you know, I can't control that. All I can control is what I do. And if we don't sell out, you know, because of market conditions, who gives a fuck? Like, it doesn't matter. Now, if you're doing an IPO type situation, which is what I think you're talking about, Monad, like Monad was doing this initial ICO thing, initial coin offering thing, and they did it in partnership with Coinbase, and they were oversubscribed. I think they had 150 or 100 and, I forget, 100 and some odd million. It was like 117 or 120 million tokens on offer. And, or maybe it was 150, I can't remember. Anyway, when I looked at the subscription status of the buys, the buys were oversubscribed. So they were oversubscribed by many millions of tokens. I forget the exact number. And all of this was during this quote unquote crash that we're experiencing. And the truth is, like, you know, if you're doing something truly innovative, if you're doing something that people can gravitate towards, if you're doing something that's going to catch the eye of a investor or that has real value, the market conditions are irrelevant. Because the truth is, like, people with money still have money even in a down market. And they didn't get that money by buying stupid shit, right? So at the end of the day, like, if you look at something like Monad, like, maybe the market's down, or maybe the sentiment's bad, and maybe they don't sell as much, or maybe it doesn't pop as hard, or maybe it moves slower off the bottom. But the truth is, like, if you're an investor, all these are good things, because it allows the token to solidify support at a certain level, and then it allows the technology to be delivered, and it allows the story to unfold, and you'll see more and more interest come into that, provided they are marketing their technology and their token and their chain in a positive way. Starting with a partnership with Coinbase is pretty solid. I mean, Coinbase is like the biggest, you know, exchange in the US. I know they have a global footprint as well. But, you know, if you're on Coinbase, you're getting probably maximum exposure, because Coinbase does a really good job of, like, notifying you inside the app. Like, hey, this is happening today, this is happening tomorrow. You know, like, I knew about this token sale a week in advance, so I was thinking about it that whole week. I was like, do I want to do this? Do I not want to do this? Blah, blah, blah. You know, so they've already done a good job of creating the right partner, being with the right partner. And so at the end of the day, the market condition, in my opinion, for something like this, I mean, maybe it, like I said, like, maybe it doesn't pop immediately or initially as hard as everybody thought it should. But over time, that'll settle out. And because they were oversubscribed in a down market, if they can deliver on the tech and they can continue to tell a good story, then as the market comes back, and we've already seen, you know, green candles today, green candles yesterday, then they'll ride that wave up with everything else, and you'll be just fine, right? Especially if you were part of the initial token offering, which was like 2.5 cents per token. So it was like super cheap.
Where is it trending? Where is it, like, trading right now after the launch?
I don't even know. Let me see. I think it was pretty much flat.
You haven't even checked, man.
Well, no, because it's too early to do anything. So, I mean, again, I'm not here to trade stuffs, right? It's like, so I'm not really concerned. But let's see. Okay, so it's 3 cents.
But isn't that like when it doesn't have like some sort of, you know, initial pump until it, you know, kind of flattens after that?
I mean, usually there's an initial pump, but it's not. I mean, it can be significant or not depending on the circumstances, right? Mm-hmm. And so this one right now is up, let's see, it's up from my buy like 25%. But I mean, I wouldn't sell right now anyway. So, I mean, again, if I look at ETH level twos, which is kind of what this is, you know, like what are some of the worst ones? Like Polygon is one of the worst ones, right? It's like 17 cents, you know? So even if it just does as bad as Polygon, I mean, that's like a, what is that? Let's see, 10, that's like a 15. That's like a 15x, you know? So I'll take that. You know, so even if it does as bad as Polygon has done over the last ever how long, I'll take a 15x, you know? I'll pocket that money, no problem, right? So, you know, and that's probably not going to happen today. So I'm not too concerned with it, but I'll keep an eye on it over the next few weeks and months and see what happens. And I'll pull my initial investment out when it makes sense, and I'll let the rest of it ride. That way I'm playing with house money and I don't have to worry about it, right? But the cool thing about this is it's like for it's Coinbase's first ever ICO offering to the public. So, you know, you don't have to be a VC in Northern California, Silicon Valley, to be invited into a room and have billions of dollars in your bank account to participate in the next Uber, right? There's an ICO right here on your app, and the average person is empowered to take advantage of that. And even if you bought, you know, $10 worth, you know, you still bought like 250 tokens or whatever it is, right? So, I mean, you can participate on some meaningful level with a low dollar amount. And this is one of the things that DeFi enables for the average person, not just the elite. So this is one of the, again, one of the beautiful things about the crypto market in and of itself.
One thing I'd like to know, because I've never really checked Monad yet, is like the total supply already like circulating?
No, it's I think it's a 50 billion supply. 50 billion seems to be like the new 10,000 number, like it was for NFTs or whatever. So I think 50 billion is the total supply, and 7.5% might have gone to Coinbase. I'm not sure, you know, how the distribution is going to work. You know, not super concerned about all that, again, because I'm not looking for, you know, I'm not looking to hold this for the rest of my life. I don't think it's the answer to all humanity's problems. I'm just looking for a decent trade. And so if that happens, or a decent swing trade, so if that happens, I'll swing trade, like I said, for profit. I'm already in the green right now, so I'm not worried about it.
You just mentioned all humanity problems. Have you ever heard about WorldCoin?
WorldCoin? I have heard of it, but I don't know anything about it.
I just saw news that it was kind of rebranded to World only, and I'd read that Sam Altman was kind of like one of the founders. I'm not sure if like the information I found was like legit, but I saw that it, you know, kind of focuses on digital identity infrastructure and you know, tying biometric verification and all that stuff to it. So actually pretty interesting, but I when I read that for the very first time, I felt like this is actually what NFTs should do, right? So I'm not sure what the token is about and why it's needed, but I thought, as you know, Sam Altman, who's obviously a pretty well-known guy out there, I thought that you might be familiar with it, but unfortunately, you're not.
No, I mean, I know of it, but I don't know what it's all about. So you would have to educate me on that. I mean, a lot of these sort of token schemes are just ridiculous. I mean, well, maybe ridiculous is the wrong word. Like, they're sort of wishful thinking. A lot of these schemes are. So, I mean, some of them aren't worth taking seriously. Some of them are, and you know, it's up for you to decide if it's something that you personally should look at, right? So for me, I'm just looking at like these tokens or these sort of tokens that ride on larger chains like Ethereum, for example. I'm looking to see if there is an adoption story or a use case. And if there isn't, I'm not super concerned with it. And these tokens that are being sort of put in place for social causes and you know, voting and all this stuff. I'm not concerned at all with that stuff yet. It's way too early for that. There's not enough adoption or people interested in that kind of thing. I mean, you see Cosmos doing this stuff all the time, like that there's a vote for this and a vote for that and a vote for the other thing. And to be honest with you, that's like having a part-time job. I don't care. Like if you really have a good leadership team, just lead and do your thing and actually make a decision instead of trying to democratize everything. Because democracy is not a good governance system. It never has been. And at the end of the day, you know, I don't want to be involved in that. Just make a fucking decision and like create value, and then people will come to what it is that you're doing. And if you don't have the ability to do that, you know, when everything is democratized, basically what you're saying is, I have no mind of my own and I'm scared to make a decision. And those are not the type of people that I want to invest with.
Yeah, that absolutely makes sense. When I just told you about a space I've been seeing when I was on scrolling on X, and it was basically about NFTs, and it said, why are we still talking about NFTs these days? And it's funny because like a couple of days ago, I listened to a podcast from two European entrepreneurs who were also, you know, talking about the best kind of investments. And when they spoke about NFTs, they basically said that the technology is great, but the way it's been used, you know, for art and everything never made sense. And that's actually funny because when I heard that, I wondered, you know, what do you think if we, because I think I just read today that the first half of 2025, NFTs reached a trading volume of $2.8 billion, which is obviously very good. Do you think if we never had that run up in January or in 2021 in general, the reputation of NFTs would be much better now?
No, because the same people would still be involved. I mean, unless you change the players, you don't change the game, you know? So at the end of the day, when you have a bunch of, you know, scammy, schemey, shitty, you know, people who are out there to try to take advantage of other people, and that's, you know, probably half the market, and then 40% of the market is incompetence, and then 5% of the market is people who can't execute, and then the last 3% of the market is people who just don't care enough to show up. Like, at the end of the day, if that's the population you're dealing with, it doesn't matter the circumstances, you're going to have crappy outcomes. They might be smaller numbers in the crappy outcomes, but still, you're going to have crappy outcomes. So, I mean, at the end of the day, like, I'm looking at people who are committed, people who are willing to show up, people who have a work ethic, people who are, you know, delivering, especially in tech. You hear the word deliverables all the time. What's the schedule for your deliverables? Deliverable, right? Like, I don't hear anyone talking about execution. I hear people talking about what they're going to do at some point, maybe sort of kind of in the future, if the planets align and it's a blue sky on a Sunday. No, fuck you and fuck that. Like, if you're going to do the thing and stop making excuses. And unfortunately, like, regardless of the run-up, whether it was a run up or run down, if the people who are, you know, running, again, and I'm using this term loosely, projects and calling themselves, and again, I'm using this term loosely, a founder, are not able to deliver and execute, then nothing matters.
Yeah, I get that. But I mean, like, what do you think needs to happen so people, like, whenever you hear people who are not familiar with NFTs speak about NFTs, all they say is, yeah, those were like the monkeys worth a million and now they're worth a couple thousand bucks. So do you think that that is ever going to fade away? Or do you think, you know, we need to have some sort of other or new utility, or just keep doing what we do until people will finally realize that, you know, the market makes sense in the end and was not like only, you know, monkeys who were expensive and the fake hype and all that stuff?
I think people need to realize why things happen and understand that everything has nuance. I mean, there was a reason that the Bored Apes were selling for what they were selling for. You know, there was a big reason for that. And part of the reason was you had celebrities using Bored Apes as their profile pics in their social media accounts. And everybody in, you know, this sort of modern era that we're living in, rather than providing value to the world and figuring out how they can be useful, they want to be famous. And so there's a big part of like Me Too and this sort of, you know, riding other people's coattails that we experienced in that era, where people who had no real value proposition, no claim to fame, no association with production, could align themselves with celebrities by owning a thing just because a celebrity owned a thing. And if you were early enough with ETH and you were early enough with Bitcoin or whatever the case may be, and you were sitting on 1,000 ETH, or, you know, you're sitting on, you know, 50 Bitcoin or whatever the case may be, you could blow $500,000 on a Bored Ape and it didn't matter, right? And so that's never going away. I mean, just look at TV shows like the Kardashians and all this kind of nonsense. Like, these people who are famous for being famous, mm-hmm. are that way because there are people in the world who actually think these people have life figured out, and that they haven't been scammed into wasting their life in front of a television screen watching these morons do moronic things and blow money on dumb shit, you know? So, like, at the end of the day, I don't see human psychology around that ever changing. People are always going to want status. This is what X is about, and Facebook and Instagram, and pick your favorite platform. You know, how many followers do you have? How many interactions? How many this? How many that? It's all a status game. That's all it is. And so if you can, you know, declare your status to the world by buying something that Snoop Dogg, you know, owns, or that, you know, Jimmy Fallon owns, or, you know, being the, oh, I've got 100,000 Twitter followers, or I've got 1 million Twitter followers, whatever. Like, if you can assign some sort of status to your life by being associated with that, by having that, that's never going away. Right? That's shortcutting your value proposition. So, I mean, you know, in the real world, a man or woman who wants to be of service to the community has to go into the community and actually do something. We moved into an era where you don't necessarily have to do anything. Like, you can buy a bunch of followers, or you can put in the work initially, like the Kardashians did, and be famous for being famous. Like, Kim Kardashian was Paris Hilton's like closet organizer, you know? And so she followed Paris Hilton's sort of, you know, playbook in becoming famous, like with the sex tape. And then Kim Kardashian had a sex tape, and they all did this whole nonsense where they just kind of followed each other into this realm of stupidity, but it paid off, you know? And now her sisters, you know, can have $1 billion, you know, makeup line or fashion line or whatever the case may be, right? But this is all predicated on perceived value. Like, for whatever reason, young women and stupid adults think that these people have life figured out. And the reality is they're just running a business. And that business is they're selling attention that they garner from the populace to advertisers, and they're cashing in big time. And it's no different in NFTs. It's no different in your local coffee shop. Like, whatever the value proposition is, there is a return on that value proposition. And if you go into entertainment, then the value proposition that you create is highly, highly leveraged, right? Like, you can make one movie and it costs you $150 million, but then you sell it to the entire globe at $15 a ticket, you know, for the next 6 weeks, and you make $1 billion on that, right? So then you wonder, like, well, why did these actors make so much money? Well, they made so much money because they were able to draw in that much money, and there was enough left to go around. Same thing with athletes. It's entertainment leveraged over time. It's true in music. It's true in movies. It's true in radio. Anything that is tracked and put into the marketplace, in other words, created once and then levered to the marketplace many, many, many times over, that's a highly leveraged industry. And there's nothing special about the people. It's just that they're participating in an industry that pays them many times over for work they do once, right? So if I'm AC/DC and I write You Shook Me All Night Long in 1982 or whatever it was, and it gets airplay on the radio every day on 10,000 radio stations 5 times a day for the next 50 years, and I get paid even a nickel every time it plays, then I'm going to do all right. My mortgage is going to be covered. You know what I mean? So, like, you can't get mad at these people or, like, you know, get mad at yourself if you've chosen an industry that's not highly levered. Like, it's just, that's what we're dealing with here. It's like leverage or no leverage. The value proposition is leveraged or it's not. And at the end of the day, you're paid in accordance to that, right? So, I mean, that's how I look at it.
Yeah, it perfectly makes sense. I mean, when you just mentioned AC/DC, I was kind of thinking about, you know, all the songs we have that get played. For example, like if you take Last Christmas from Wham, yeah, you know, they probably can live off that song, right?
Probably.
And when you talked about movies, I mean, in the end, like the story is not as significant as, you know, the actors who are actually, you know, in the movies. Like if you have a Leonardo DiCaprio movie, it's probably going to be successful regardless of the story, right? So yeah, basically crazy if you think about it. And I think you need to learn that these mechanisms and try to take advantage of it, right?
Exactly. I mean, that's why most wealth in the private sector, most millionaires come from the real estate world. It's not because these people are special. Mm-hmm. It's because they're participating in a highly leveraged industry. Like they can borrow, you know, 90-95% of the value of a property and only put 5% of their own money in and then rent that out and then go to the next property, do the same thing, right? So like it just, you know, when you're talking about making money, it's not about the value that you think you're providing. It's about the value that you actually provide to the real world as measured in monetary terms, right? So like for me, when I look at the Kardashians, they have zero value. I don't watch them. I don't like them. I don't care for them. I think they've miseducated a whole generation of young women, right? But when I look at the numbers, they sell lots of makeup, clothes, advertising. So the truth is the value that they've provided to other businesses is off the charts, which is why they're all wealthy, right? To me, it's zero. To other businesses, it's billions. And that's why they make what they make, right? Same thing with Avatar or whatever, you know, fantastic movie comes out next, you know, Star Wars or whatever the case may be. You know, like George Lucas made more money off action figures than he did off Star Wars, right? Because he was smart enough to hold on to those rights because he felt like if this thing hits, then perhaps there's a market there taking advantage of like that toy craze that was happening in like the late 70s, early 80s, right? And so at the end of the day, like all of these highly leveraged things, like when you have a reputation for creating incredible things, you know, like again, around IP, intellectual property, whether it's Star Wars or Goodfellas NFTs or whatever the thing is, like the hardest part is building your reputation for the value of the IP, which is why you never want to devalue what you're creating. And so this is like the big problem in the NFT market is everybody devalues what they create with giveaways and free shit. If that's your model, you're never going to get anywhere because you're just signaling to the market that you can't sell and you have no value. So the last thing you want to do is that. And then once that reputation is established and you've got somewhat of a following, it doesn't even have to be that big of a following. It just has to be like a following that's dedicated toward whatever your mission is. Then you can take that to, you know, an action figure manufacturer or a comic book maker or a storyteller. And you can say, listen, I have this many people who really enjoy this story or this product. What can we do together that we can both make money on? And then you can have a negotiation about, okay, well, we're going to create this comic or we're going to create this toy line or whatever. And you can have X percentage of it, but I'm keeping the IP, right? And you can negotiate that. And that's all that's happening on a large scale when it comes to storytelling around film, television, you know, movies, that sort of thing. So, you know, when we look at what we're doing here in the NFT world and people talk about, you know, I heard this on the OG Triple podcast the other day, we're talking about like NFT projects that could overtake Disney. And I'm like, mic request, there's not a single fucking NFT project that exists that's ever going to overtake Disney. They've got 150 years of storytelling on all of you fuckers, and nobody here is doing even a remotely decent job at telling a story as well as Walt Disney did back in the day. Even though Disney has, you know, jumped into a lot of the wokeness and lost a lot of parents and kids to the wokeness, they have 100 years plus of storytelling that's been ingrained into a population of people across the globe. Right. So imagine that. Right. So we have to think past oh, well, you know, 6 months out, we're going to do this. A year out, we're going to do that. No, we have to think in terms of decades, in terms of multiple decades. Like, how can we get the story out over time and continue to grow and build and leverage what we're creating? And there's not a single project that I'm aware of that's even close to, you know, touching that level yet. Now, that doesn't mean that it won't happen, but just we're not there yet. Like, we're still in the infancy of this thing, and there's a lot of potential. And we'll see what people do. Again, like, can people execute? Can people create? That's the big question.
What did you mean when you said that Disney lost people to wokeness? Did you mean like the shitstorm they got with Snow White and The Little Mermaid and all that stuff?
Yeah, I mean, there's a push right now in the Western world towards self-hatred. And I don't know why this, well, I do know why this is. I mean, like, academia and school has miseducated entire generations of kids to hate themselves, especially if they're white. Like, if you're a white kid, you're supposed to feel less than, you're supposed to feel guilty. You're supposed to feel all these things for all of these reasons that you had nothing to do with and that have existed since the dawn of time, right? You know, whether it's slavery or whether it's white privilege or whether it's, you know, this ism or that ism, there's a big push towards self-hatred. And so this is what's happening in the Western world and what was happening severely under like the Biden administration was a big push toward this. So you saw Disney, who does literally children's animations and stories, start telling stories about gay people and this and that and the other thing. Like, even in one of the Star Wars episodes, they started inserting like the pronoun game, right? Like, there was a Jedi who was referred to as they, them instead of he or she, right? And so parents started picking up on this and they're like, we don't want our kids indoctrinated with this bullshit. You know, if you want to have that agenda, then keep your agenda, you know, to your, you know, to yourself and tell that story privately, but don't educate my kid to think that there's 15 genders, you know, or don't educate my kid about sexuality, be it homosexual or heterosexual. Like, they're kids. We just want to tell them a good story. And Disney completely fell prey to this. They did this in the comics that they own now because they bought Marvel. They made all of the white characters black or Asian. They did this a few years ago. There was an Asian Hulk and there was a, you know, like Captain America is constantly being turned from this skinny little white guy who took a serum to become a super soldier to Falcon, who is a black character. It's like, well, just make Falcon a black character because that's who he is and tell a good story around Falcon. Stop trying to make Falcon Captain America and vice versa, right? And it's so lazy because there's so many great stories you can tell around black characters. There's so many great black historical figures. But rather than actually learning history and telling great stories around black people, these lazy writers just turn traditional white characters black or Asian or female or whatever the case may be. Female is the one right now. Like, if you look, if you watch a show like, especially in the UK, oh my God, so bad. Like, we watch a lot of UK crime shows and all the bosses are female. You know, all of the male characters are inept or sort of weak. They're silly. You know, they're used as comic relief or stupidity, you know. So, like, there's this huge push, like, against male, against white, against Western culture. You know, you can sing all day long your Muslim songs, but if you show up in counter-protest and you sing your patriotic song in the UK, you get arrested. And the UK actually arrests on average 30 people per day for social media posts. And this is fucking crazy. Like, this is like Nazi shit. And people call conservatives Nazis. But they're, you know, like these, the left wokeisms are actually the ones who are anti-everything, anti-freedom, anti-free speech. Don't say this, don't say that, don't hurt your feelings, blah, blah, blah. I'm a victim. The world should line up and meet my needs. That's not the way the world works. And, you know, like the whole empathy thing with Elon Musk, like people took the comment of him saying that, you know, empathy can be weaponized against you. They, you know, they turned it into him saying that empathy was a bad thing, you know, and then they forgot the whole context where he was saying, if you live in an empathetic society and you invite people into that world and you show them, you know, too much kindness and too much generosity, then what you do is you create a situation where you create dependence and you create basically the ability for your own society to be destroyed by people coming in who don't share your values, right? Which is a huge nuanced sort of a thing, right? And it's a whole different philosophy. It's not saying that empathy is bad. It's saying that anything taken to an extreme is bad. And that's the point he was trying to make. So the wokeism was basically around that. It was just like taking everything to an extreme, whether it was sexuality, pronouns, you know, even words like empathy or freedom, like everything to the extreme is bad. And at the end of the day, like there has to be nuance and there has to be something in the middle. And that's where I fall. So like, you know, at the end of the day, I just want a reasonable conversation. If I'm watching something on Disney, I want it to be entertaining. I don't want it to be political. You know, if I'm watching something on the news, I want it to be factual, not entertaining. But all of these things have gotten mixed up in the wash and people have sort of lost themselves. And so, you know, where we are today is we've sort of swung the pendulum back the other way. And who knows, it's probably going to swing too far the other way before it starts to come back toward the middle. But everything will trend, you know, back and forth and back and forth until we get to the middle at some point. But the problem with all of this stuff is that with so many people being miseducated at a young age, this indoctrination is very difficult to overcome and it requires a lot of self-education. And so parents of kids, parents of young people who are going into the world and having to fight these battles that were created by academia who don't live in the real world, this is a travesty and it should be avoided at all costs. We should all live in the world of facts. We should all live in the world of performance and production and results. And that means that we have to be responsible for ourselves and our actions. And it means that we can't blame other people every time something bad happens to us.
It's fun when you just mentioned that, I actually forgot that Disney acquired Marvel. And I remember seeing some sort of video about like there it looks like there is like some sort of Marvel or Spider-Man video game, and I saw a video about people complaining about, you know, they even included wokeness into that game. You know, Mary Jane looked like a transgender. Out of nowhere they kind of included a gay couple, which was not relevant to the story at all. And but I feel like, you know, with the amount of shitstorms Disney got, it's getting better right now, doesn't it?
Well, I think it had to because they had so much pushback, right? I mean, you know, being a comic collector, there were so many stories around like characters who were converted from male to female or from white to black or from or from white to Asian. It's like, I remember I was in a comic shop one day and a little kid came in. It just happened to be a little black kid, right? He came into the comic shop. And he was with his mom and he came up to the counter and I was just looking through some of the comics. So I happened to hear what he was saying, but he came up to the counter and he's like, "Hey, can you tell me where the Hulk comics are?" Right. And the comic store owner walks over to where the Hulk comics are and he pulls out the Hulk and it was Asian Hulk. Right. And the kid looks at the comic, the black kid looks at Asian Hulk and goes, "That's not Hulk. You know, show me Hulk." Right. And the store owner was trying to explain to the kid that, you know, Marvel had done this switcheroo where, you know, they're telling Asian Hulk story now, right? And the kid is like, "Are you fucking kidding me?" You know? And the mom is just sitting there going, "What in the world is going on?" Right? Like, people are just fed up with this dumb shit. And it's so lazy and so stupid because, I mean, there again, like, there's so many good stories that can be told for real life Asian people and characters and real life black people and characters. To think that you have to like steal the legacy of a white character or a white female character to create a black or a Asian character is fucking lazy. I mean, there's so many beautiful stories that you could tell. And if I were, you know, black or Asian, I'd be offended by the fact that they thought that they had to take my culture and like graft it onto like a white character. I'd be like, no, like tell my story from one of my people, from one of my people's perspectives, you know? And so they did get some pushback, but I think really what it was the culmination of pushback over a long period of years, because this lasted, I think, for like in the comic world, it lasted a good 5 or 6 years, this nonsense, right? And I was like, look, I'm just not buying this stuff. And when comic sales started to tank, and when people started to dump subscriptions, of course, people voted with their dollars, and then they had to sort of, you know, temper it a little bit. But it's still in there. They've still woven it in there over the years. Like the most recent, like the Jedi story I told you, that came out this past year, right? So they're telling the they-them pronoun story on Disney, you know, this past year.
Yeah, crazy. But I think, you know, from the idea to the publishing, that probably, you know, it takes a while. But yeah, I get that. Absolutely. Yeah, let's hope they do better in the future. And let's speak a little bit about NFTs now. Obviously, we will have something planned for Black Friday, which is in, what day is today? Monday, which is in 4 days. Mm-hmm. And we have our Black Friday batch coming up. Which is the first batch after the sirens that we have. And the first batch, when was the last, I think last time we spoke about it, the last mail drop was back in 2024, right?
Yeah, we haven't done one in 25. So yeah, it's been a minute.
So it's going to be the first mail batch we have this year and probably the last of 2025. And as always, we will have a full family included in the batch of 100. We will have one underboss, one consigliere, 5 capos, 1 hitman, and 1-of-1. And yeah, as you guys know, all the pieces will be animated. We've seen some sneak peeks already on X. The animations are going to be... like there is a wide range of animations. There will be pieces with little animations. There will be pieces with more complex animations. There will actually be 4 pieces that have no hand trait in the first frame, so in the still image, and you will basically see the video, the animation create a hand trait for them. So these 4 pieces are special, of course. Plus the 1-of-1 we have. So we will have 5 pieces in total that are definitely, when it comes to rarity, do you say more rare or rarer?
You could say either.
To me.
Either way is fine.
Okay. Yeah. So yeah, 5 special pieces included. And yeah, I'm looking forward to that drop. I mean, many of the holders have played with animations already. And I've seen very, very good animations out there from, you know, people who created them. And I think, you know, animations give kind of a new view to a piece, and you can see it from a different angle. I think it adds a lot of fun. And yeah, I've been looking forward to that batch for quite some time now. And yeah, couldn't be more excited. As you guys know, people who have Artober pieces will get the batch pieces discounted. So you will get a piece for 0.05 soul. And yeah, if you haven't checked the post from Jason yet, you should be able to see your wallet in there and the amount of discounted mints you get. So yeah, but Jason, maybe we should somehow like attach that list somewhere, or you know, make it accessible to people so they can refresh their memories, right?
Yeah, I mean, it's already posted in the announcements 3 or 4 up, but feel free to grab that image and repost it. Absolutely.
Yeah, so we will be live on Friday at our usual mint time, 6 p.m. UTC. We'll go live during spaces. Let's see who gets the special pieces. There's actually one piece that is my probably favorite of them all. I'm going to reveal that after the mint. And yeah, let's see how this goes. It's been a while since we had a batch, and yeah, nothing more to add, to be honest. Like, this is all the information I got. So I hope you guys show up. Hope you guys have fun with the mint. And yeah, this is going to be the last mint before we go into our special little Artober series that we will have towards the end of December with 7 unique mints from different artists. And yeah, maybe you want to say a few words about that?
About the mint specifically?
Yeah, like we
oh,
have,
you mean
we
the
have,
oh, I'm sorry,
we
yeah.
kind of team.
You mean the last week?
Exactly, the mint we teamed up with Maria.
Yeah, for sure. So that last week of the year where everybody's kind of hanging out, you know, you've done the family thing, or maybe the family's still around the house, but everybody's kind of in a holding pattern, you know, after Christmas, between Christmas and New Year's, there's that 1 week, right? And so what we're planning on doing is doing a 7-day drop, a 7-day series of drops that lead up to the first of the year that basically talk about renewal, right? So this isn't about elves and Santa Claus and snowmen. You know, much like the October drops were, some of them, you know, some of them were a little campy, but most of them were highly meaningful. We want to make this more of an exclusive drop to 7 creators, or from 7 creators that myself, Alex, and Maria are going to handpick. And each one leading up is going to deal with a concept leading up to the idea of renewal and starting that new year, because obviously that's, you know, like there's nothing wrong with starting, you know, your new program or your new whatever at any point. But that sort of way of marking time, that new year, that sort of starting fresh, it gives everyone that feeling that, you know, there's always new opportunity around the corner. And so we kind of want to lead up and highlight that. And so we're going to pick 7 topics that lead up to that with 7 different artists, and we'll have those drops, and that will close out the year basically for Goodfellas. So yeah, I'm pretty stoked about that. Definitely going to be more exclusive than the previous one, and definitely going to be something that high quality collectors are drawn to, and you definitely won't want to miss it.
Yeah, absolutely. I love the theme we have for that series at the end of the year. I hope we can recreate the energy we had with the October series. I mean, I loved when, you know, we all got together every night or every evening or whatever time it was for anyone. But, you know, just getting together, having that mint and cherishing the art was so great. And people loved it. I know that it's quite a commitment to, you know, be there every day. But as you said, you know, the days between Christmas and New Year's Eve are, you know, some sort of lazy days. Nobody really has anything to do. So, yeah, we look forward to that. You know what's the schedule from now. Friday, Black Friday batch coming up soon, in a couple of days, actually. And then we will have the big series towards the end of the year. We need to come up with a good name. Do we have one yet? No, we don't, right?
For the batch or for the last week?
Are you listening to what I say?
Yeah.
For the final series. Batch is obviously the Black Friday batch.
Yeah. That's why I was confused. Yeah, we definitely have to come up with something cool. I've been chatting with Maria behind the scenes, and you know, who knows? Maybe we'll have to get Grok help us name it or something. But we'll come up with something cool for that last week. But nothing has been set in stone as of yet. And obviously, you know, as we get closer and closer to that, we'll have something for you. But we'll definitely lead way up to that. And like, you know, I mean, the cool thing is like December for me is probably one of the coolest times of the year. I just love it. I love the spirit that everyone here in the States gets into, because we've got, you know, we have Halloween at the end of October, then we have Thanksgiving at the end of November, then we have Christmas at the end of December, and then going into the first. So, you know, being raised in that sequence of events just leads up to awesomeness, and I love the holidays. So we'll have the first part of December to just kind of chill and, you know, relax and do what we want to do. I'm going to be writing some code, some of the things around the ideas that I mentioned inside the Bosses channel. The non-staking staking for one, and then the collectors creating their own collections, which I think is the right way to go in terms of building your own gallery so that you own and control what you're doing. So I'm going to be writing some code around that, but that'll be all behind the scenes stuff. And then we won't do anything like mint wise until that last week. So save your pennies. They'll go for 0.21 soul like they always do. So 7 days at 0.21 soul. And we probably won't do like a contest setting, but there might be some recognition or some bonus given to those, or there'll definitely be some bonus given to those who participate. So just keep an eye out for that, and we'll come up with a name, something cool. Me and Maria, Alex, and Grok together, we'll come up with something.
I will not use Grog anytime soon again, man. I've used Grog too much for, you know, animation and stuff. But yeah, looking forward to all that. I think this should be it for today. I hope you guys have a great week. For anyone who celebrates, have a great Thanksgiving. And then we will see you guys on Black Friday again. Have a great one. We'll see you. Bye-bye.
And take care, guys.